Well, as Chinese authorities confront public criticism of their handling of the virus outbreak, there's been a new leak of official documents into what experts say is cultural genocide committed by Beijing against China's Uyghur minority in Xinjiang province. The spreadsheets released to multiple media outlets by Uyghur exiles document that growing a long beard, wearing a head veil, and having a passport have been some of the reasons Chinese officials have used to justify putting up to 1 million Uyghur Muslims into what are called re-education camps by China. Beijing maintains, against a growing weight of evidence to the contrary, that the camps are schools to combat religious extremism. Relatives of some of those who are detained say otherwise.
When I viewed the document and learned that my younger sister was in a detention centre for the past 2 years, I couldn't sleep or eat for several days. I never imagined my younger sister would be in prison.
I worry about my children's safety. But if everyone only worries about their own safety, then there's not going to be justice in the world.
The voices of two Uyghur exiles. Well, Adrian Zenz is an expert on China's ethnic policies. He has forensically examined these new documents. I asked him what they reveal.
This document is by far the most detailed and the most personal. It tells us the personal stories of hundreds of individuals and the reasons why they are in internment and in the process of whether they should be released or not, often over several iterations of verdicts, which might initially be negative, and then eventually it might say, well, their behavior has been transformed, they have repented and confessed, they have seen the reason why they were put in a camp, and the family, their behavior is now also better. They are cooperating with the local authorities, and they're acknowledging that they've done wrong.
What makes you think these documents are real? I mean, it's a PDF, they're spreadsheets, it's quite possible for anybody would be familiar with the style. What makes you think they're real?
I analyze these documents in several ways. Firstly, I have a large cache of local government spreadsheets from Xinjiang that contain thousands or millions of identities. And I was able to verify the personal identification numbers, the names, the addresses, and in some instances, the occupations of 337 persons on the document. Secondly, I closely studied the language, a very sort of technical language of government related to the whole internment campaign that is found throughout the document. And I was able to find this language and to corroborate its use from other government policy documents and local documents issued to local government officials and teams. And then the third way that we authenticated the document is we were able to talk to exile Uyghurs, especially in Istanbul, who identified their own family members in the document and said, these are my family members.
And it's said to have come at great personal risk to whoever has leaked it. Who do you think that might be?
We do not know the identity of the person in Xinjiang who leaked it, and that's a good thing. Although I would assume that it would have been a government official and probably most likely a minority official who cares about what's going on. But we don't know. Certainly the persons who received it from Xinjiang then, who live overseas in exile, who decided to give it to the media, they took a personal risk because the Chinese government threatens those Uyghurs in exile and it tells them, look, we can still try to harm you even though you're not in China.
And can you give us an idea from your research into all of these documents and the conversations with Uyghurs about the impact of China's campaign in Xinjiang on the communities there?
Well, the impact has been incredible. Communities have been virtually torn apart. A large percentage of the adult population, between 10 and 20% in some regions, higher percentages than that, have been put into different kind of internment camps. Some have been sentenced to long prison terms. Everybody lives in great fear and intimidation. The mosques have been closed. Kids are put into boarding schools, where oftentimes they only come home on the weekend, and where they have to speak Chinese in school or else they get punished. And especially their Uyghur teachers, they get punished if they don't speak Chinese to the Uyghur kids in school. It's a program of cultural genocide of unprecedented proportions.
The Chinese government does insist that this is part of their fight against terrorism, that it's about re-education. Is there any validity to their claims, given that in the past there have been Uyghur activists who have staged violent attacks against the Chinese government authorities?
There is validity to the fact that the Uyghurs have committed acts of violent resistance, including acts that can certainly be classified as terrorism. But there is no validity to then go and say, we are eliminating the culture of an entire ethnic group and cracking down on their religion, including the completely normal and healthy practice of religion, in order to wipe out terrorism.
Given the pressures that China is under at the moment over coronavirus, is there a prospect, do you think, that the leak of these documents and this extensive information they've revealed, that China might concede that its behaviour has to be reined in Xinjiang?
Well, let me put it bluntly. Why should China change its behaviour? They are literally getting away with the greatest incarceration of an ethno-religious minority since the Holocaust without any consequence, any ramification, and very little definitive international criticism. They have co-opted the United Nations. They have gotten almost 20 Muslim countries to sign a letter supporting their policy in Xinjiang. And they're just laughing at the West, saying it's increasingly irrelevant.
Are there any actions that you would want to see the international community take? I mean, that's a very strong criticism you've made.
I think the international community, firstly, need to speak up very forcefully and powerfully. It needs to resuscitate and resurrect multilateral international mechanisms, such as the United Nations Human Rights Council, who has actually approved China's human rights record at their meeting in late 2018. And it does need to consider sanctions, such as economic sanctions.
Adrian Zenz is a senior fellow in China Studies at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in Washington, D.C.